Oh, good evening, everybody. So we will continue on this evening from where we left off last evening. We'll start with some meditation as usual. Then we'll have the talk and then some Q&A. Let's cultivate our motivation. Part of our precious human life is our own spiritual yearning, the fact that we have interest in the Dharma, that we are seeking meaning in our lives and turning to religion to find that meaning and purpose. So while I believe that all beings have that yearning at some level, for many people it's really obscured. And so the fact that we have spiritual yearning and that we've made it a priority in our life is something to really respect within ourselves. And so, wanting to find answers about the meaning of life, we've come to the teachings. And so now we want to listen attentively so that we can really take in what the Buddha has taught us based on his own experience. And one of the principal things that he has taught us, that he sees as the most beneficial way of making our life meaningful, is to generate the loving, compassionate, altruistic aspiration of bodhicitta. So seeing the disadvantages of our self-centeredness, seeing the benefits of cherishing others and their kindness, then we generate the aspiration for full enlightenment in order to benefit all beings most effectively. So generate that motivation right now. And then open your eyes and come out of your meditation. So tonight is our last night on this chapter, so I think I better start with the chapter right away, because I didn't get as far as I wanted to get last night. So let's dig in here. Okay, so we had completed up to verse 39 yesterday, so we'll start with verse 40 now. So remember that we've bowed to the Buddha, we've made offerings to the Buddha of beautiful objects, of a bath, okay? And now we are beginning to open up and confess and reveal our own negativities. So we're contemplating the four opponent powers. You know, having regret for our negative actions. Then second, having a determination not to do them again. Third, taking refuge and generating bodhicitta in order to restore a good motivation towards whoever it was that we harmed. And then fourth, a remedial action. And so Shantideva is leading us through this by showing us how he himself practices and thinks. And one of the chief things that is motivating him to do this revelation of faults, this confession, is the remembrance of death and impermanence, that our death is definite, but the time of death is indefinite. And when the time of death comes, which it certainly will, our body doesn't come with us. Our possessions and money don't come with us. Our friends and relatives and status and awards are all left behind. And the only thing that comes with us at the time of death is the karma that we've accumulated and the mental habits that we've developed. And so seeing this, the reality of our own mortality and what it is that really comes with us, then when we look back on our life at what we've spent our time doing, then sometimes we can be so full of regret, you know, because we've spent an incredible amount of time, you know, dwelling in a very negative state of mind on the account of people or objects that at the time of death get left behind, but all that karma we created in relationship to them, from being attached to them, from being jealous if other people have more of them than we do, of being resentful and angry if somebody interferes with our happiness. All that negative karma comes with us. And so thinking about that, we're kind of feeling a sense of horror and a sense of, whoa, you know, I've really set my priorities all wrong in my life, and now I'm seeing it for the first time, and I want to set my priorities correctly because this life is very precious. And when I get to the time that I'm dying, there's no rerun button to push to go back in time and live my life again. You know, when the time of death is there, we're going, you know, and it doesn't matter how rich you are, how well connected you are, how many doctors are around you, how many family members are there crying, begging you not to die. At that time, there is no choice because our body is failing. Our mind is absorbing and becoming more subtle because the body can't sustain it. And we're going on to the next life with some karma ripening. Okay? And so understanding this now helps us to really think about what is valuable in our lives so that we live every day in a very meaningful way. If we live every day very meaningfully, then when the time of death comes, there's no regret and there's no fear, okay? Because we've practiced well. We haven't created a ton of negative karma. So there's no regret, no fear. And they say that actually, for the very realized and excellent practitioners, that dying is like going on a picnic, you know, that they have a very good time dying. Yeah. And I know my own abbot, Chabche Ling Rinpoche, who gave me my monastic ordination, when he died, he stayed in meditation for 13 days. Yeah, his body was sitting upright. The heat had left the limbs, but there was still a little bit of heat at the heart area, indicating that his subtle consciousness had not yet left the body. And he stayed like that, meditating on the ultimate nature of reality for 13 days. Okay. I think that was probably better than a picnic. You know, that for him, that kind of meditation is so blissful, and feeling so much happiness by being able to make his life meaningful and feeling no fear whatsoever because there's no negative karma hanging around to ripen. Then, you know, death is totally okay. and even enjoyable. So it's for this purpose that Shantideva is giving us all this advice, so that we can die in a very good way, have a good rebirth, and so that we're able to continue practicing the Dharma in future lives, and then keep on purifying our mind, accumulating positive potential, studying the Dharma, practicing it, so that we can really progress along the path as we go. Okay. So let's keep in mind why we're talking about death. Okay? Because some people think, oh, when you talk about death, it's so morbid. You know, don't talk about it because then it might happen. Yeah? As if you don't talk about death, then it might not happen. Is that true? That if you don't talk about it, it won't happen? No. Okay, death is going to happen whether we talk about it or not. So we might as well talk about it so we are prepared for when it happens. Okay. Because it's not like, death gets planned and everything's all laid out. Okay, we don't have a ready-made script for dying that we have, we have rehearsed the whole time. Yeah. For advanced practitioners, yes, they've done that. There's a whole meditation they know how to do at the time of death. And they just do the meditation and have control over their death process. But for the rest of us, death can come at any moment. And we can't say, excuse me, but I'm really busy today. Could I die next week instead? You know, we can't do that. It's there. We have to deal with it. Okay. So we'll continue on as Shantideva is giving us advice and sharing with us how he thinks. Although lying here on a bed and relying on relatives, I alone have to bear the feeling of being cut off from my vitality. Okay, so there you are, lying on the bed. You're relying on your relatives to feed you or, be nearby. However, no matter how many other people are there in the room, we die alone. And we go through all the experience and the sensations of dying alone. Nobody else, even if somebody else in the room is dying, they're not sharing our experience. They're having their own experience. Okay? For a person seized by the messengers of death, what good is a relative and what good is a friend? At that time, merit alone is my protection, and I have not applied myself to it. Okay, so at the time of death, what good is it having friends and relatives? You know, what can they do for you? They can't take away your fear, your misery when you're dying. In fact, sometimes having friends and relatives around when we're dying makes it more difficult. Yeah, I mean, can you imagine? They're the people that you care about, and they're all crying hysterically, and you're trying to die and take refuge and meditate on emptiness, and the people you care about are like crying. Is that going to be nice? Yeah, the friends and relatives are just going to be a big disturbance. You're going to want to say, "Hey, look. Go out of the room. If you're going to cry, go somewhere else." Okay? Actually, many years ago, I was helping one young Singaporean man who had cancer, who was dying. And we kind of talked about his death. Of course, things didn't turn out exactly as we had talked about. But he told his sister, who was taking care of him, that if she got upset while he was dying, please leave the room. Yeah. And she was very respectful of that. So if you're ever with somebody who's dying, you know, pay attention to them and try and help them. Don't just sit around and get emotionally upset, because it doesn't help anybody in the situation. And if you feel like you can't control at that moment, then leave the room and process your emotions somewhere else, letting the environment in the room of the dying person be peaceful. Okay? So Shantideva is saying, you know, friends and relatives aren't useful at the time of death. What is useful is our merit and our positive potential. But while we had the time to create it, we were busy doing other things. Okay? I've always thought that we could write a book called The 4,957,549,113 Excuses Why I Can't Practice the Dharma. Yeah? Maybe somebody has a few more I can add in case I didn't get them all. But, you know, we have so many reasons why we can't purify our negative karma, why we don't have time to create virtue. Now, so many excuses, like, I have to eat breakfast, yeah, or I have to water the plants, or I have to clean the house, yeah, or I have to go in and work overtime. Okay? But we have so many excuses, and yet at the time of death, all of those are worth nothing, because if we didn't create positive potential, we just don't have it to take with us at the time of death. Yeah? So it's important to do our practice now while we have the opportunity and the chance to make that a priority in our life. And not to let all these very silly, mundane things distract us. Because what usually is distracting us are the 8 worldly concerns. We talked about those yesterday. Remember, attachment to pleasant sensual sensations and aversion to unpleasant ones. Attachment to approval and praise and aversion to criticism and blame. Attachment to having a good reputation and a good image, and aversion to having a bad one. Now, attachment to our money and possessions, aversion to losing them. Okay? So all those 8 concerns that are just centered around the happiness of this life and very focused on me, okay, me, the center of the universe, when we spend our time chasing those 8 worldly concerns, at the end of the day, we don't have anything to show at all. Okay? Because all those 8 stay here, and meanwhile, we're going on to the next life. Okay. O protectors, I, negligent and unaware of this danger, have acquired many vices out of attachment to this transient life. So that's just what we were saying. Okay, unaware of our own mortality, unaware of the fact that death can happen at any time, out of attachment to this very transient life that goes by so quickly, we've created a great stock of negative karma. One completely languishes while being led today to have the limbs of one's body amputated. Parched with thirst and with pitiable eyes, one sees the world differently. How much more is one overpowered by the horrifying appearances of the messengers of death, as one is consumed by the fever of terror and smeared with a mass of excrement. With distressed glances, I seek protection in the 4 directions. Which good person will be my protector from this great fear? Seeing the four directions devoid of protection, I return to confusion. What shall I do in that state of great fear? Okay. So if we think of, let's say, somebody who has been very injured and they have to have all four limbs amputated, you know, that person's going to be terrified, especially if they have to have that surgery without any kind of anesthetic. So they're going to be parched with thirst, with very pitiful eyes, and, you know, terrorized by that. So if you think, and that's just having your arms and legs cut off. So if that's terrifying, then think of what's going to happen at the time of death when we're leaving everything behind, not just our arms and legs, but our whole body we're leaving behind, and where we're leaving even our whole ego identity behind, okay? So this whole concept that we have of who we are, I am this person, so therefore such and such is going to happen and this and that can be expected, all this, all these images we have of ourselves, yeah, based on how we fit into a certain environment, at the time of death, the environment and all these images are evaporating, okay? Because we don't take our body with us to the next life. We don't take our social standing. We don't take our flat with us. We're going on without any of the things that usually give us an identity, okay? So imagine how frightening this is going to be at the time of death if we haven't practiced, okay? When we have to give up everything, including our identity. And there we are searching around for help, looking in the four directions, yeah, looking everywhere, looking for somebody who can help us. But there's no, you know, friend or relative who can take this misery away from us. Why? Because when we had the time to do the practice that would prevent this misery, we were too busy chasing pleasure. We were too busy retaliating against our enemies. Okay? So at that very last moment, there's nothing there that can help. Okay, as much as we're crying out for help, what can a friend and relative do? Okay, at the most, they might remind us of our spiritual mentor. They can tell us to take refuge. They can guide us on a purification meditation or, you know, on the taking and giving meditation or on a meditation on emptiness. They can ask us to remember those things. But if during our life we haven't had any familiarity with those practices, even though our friends and relatives may remind us at the time of death, we're not going to remember how to do the practices. Okay? So while we're alive, people give us all sorts of advice to listen to Dharma teachings and practice. But we ignore the advice, and then at the time of death, we go, ah, what's going to happen? Okay? So if that happens, that's because of our own ignorance, not taking the wise advice that we've received. Okay? I remember one time, there was one young man who was dying of cancer, and he asked me for a meditation practice to do. So I contacted my teacher, who was able to prescribe a very specific practice for him to do. And when I called him up and I said, come over and I'll teach you this meditation practice, and this could be very effective in curing your illness, he said to me, oh, well, I'm back at work and I feel better and I don't have any time now. And here was I knew, I mean, if you have a cancerous brain tumor, you know, you need to do some serious practice. Otherwise, there's not going to be a good prognosis. And here I was, having the tools to help him. And he told me he didn't have time. And I knew that after some time, he would get worse, and he might even die. And at that time, he'll come to me for help. But what can I do at that time? And in fact, that's what happened. You know, several months later, the tumor flared up. He had to stop working. He died. And at that time, you know, I was there. I was helping him as best as I could. But the time when I really could have helped him, he was too busy. Okay. So similar, we may not have a brain tumor now, but we are all in the process of dying, because as soon as we're conceived in our mother's womb, aging and death begins to approach. Okay, it's not like we're living and then something called aging happens accidentally and death comes as a surprise. Okay, but from the very moment that we're conceived in our mother's womb, after that it's all aging. And it's all headed towards death, and there's no way to avoid it. Okay? So don't think that because you're healthy, you know, that this advice doesn't pertain to you. Because remember the verse we read yesterday that said that death doesn't wait for tasks done or tasks undone? It just comes when it will. Okay? So, you know, we're looking in all the directions, not finding any protection, then becoming confused. And Shantideva is saying, what shall I do in that state of great fear? Because having wasted one's precious human life, not having practiced, not having purified, and instead having created a lot of negative karma, what do I do now? You know, death is approaching. What do I do? There's no quick fix. Yeah, there's no pill to take at that moment that purifies our negative karma. Okay? So at this point, now his mind is beginning to change. And so he says, right now, yeah, okay, so seeing that there's nothing that friends and relatives can do to help me, you know, therefore, right now, I go for refuge to the protectors of the world. In other words, to the Buddhas, whose power is great, to the Jinas, to the conquerors, those who have conquered the defilements, who strive to protect the world and who eliminate every fear. Okay? So how does the Buddha eliminate fear? Okay? Does the Buddha eliminate fear by getting rid of all the things that we're afraid of? No. Okay? Getting rid of fear does not mean separating from all the things that we're afraid of, because that's impossible. Where are you going to go where you're going to be completely free of everything you're afraid of? Rather, becoming fearless means transforming our own heart, transforming our own mind. If our heart and mind are transformed, then no matter what circumstance we're in, we're not going to be afraid. Okay? So how does the Buddha protect us and stop our fear? By teaching us the Dharma so that we know how to control our own mind, so that we know how to work with our moods and our thoughts. Okay? If we know how to do that and practice doing that and are well trained in doing that, then we're not going to have any fears. Okay. Because then if anger comes up, we know to meditate on patience. If attachment comes up, we know to meditate on impermanence. If jealousy arises, we know it's time to meditate on rejoicing. Okay? So we know what to do. We're familiar with it. So then there won't be any fear. Okay, verse 48. Likewise, I earnestly go for refuge to the Dharma that is mastered by them and that annihilates the fear of the cycle of existence, and to the assembly of bodhisattvas as well. So verse 47 is taking refuge in the Buddha. Verse 48 is taking refuge in the Dharma and in the Sangha. Here the Sangha is the Bodhisattva Sangha.